Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to Channel Talks. I'm your host, Nick Kyrgios. I did promise after last amazing discussion that we had with Jay McBain that I was going to get into the dirties, the nitty gritty of operational detail in terms of revenue technology, because revenue technology is right now, or you can't look anywhere without seeing that word or RevTech. And that's what we're going to go into today. And I'm so delighted to be able to bring two industry legends on this discussion point. So honoured and excited to be able to bring to the channel Barry Schwein. Barry's a pioneer in effectively driving strategy, transformation and revenue across many vendors with revenue technology. He is a business leader. He's the go-to expert in terms of operational excellence and all things tech automation, which is basically everything today, right? Everyone wants to be a tech company. Barry's he's got a very deep understanding in sales and the operational side as far as strategy and execution is concerned, and he's done that through a number of pretty substantial organizations: VMware, Cisco, Aruba Networks, 24/7 AI, Quantum, Splunk, and PwC. Barry, please forgive me if I've forgotten a few of those. Equally excited, I've got Scott Frew, who's the founder and CEO of iAsset. Scott is infamous for inventing world-class platforms around revenue technology over the last couple of decades in this space. So, gentlemen, welcome. How are you all?
Doing great, Nick. Thanks for having me. Thanks,
Nick. Oh, no, pleasure, mate. It's a pleasure. Guys, I want to start with first trying to break down and define many of these terminologies that are being thrown around at the moment. So, Barry, what is revenue technology or RevTech or sales tech?
You know, it's in this world we live in where data is king and you want to get insights into people trying to do business, people trying to measure business, people trying to monitor the business. You know, it's all the technology these days that companies are working on integrating, working on leveraging, and then, you know, thinking about where they do their business. And companies that have a strong goal of working with the channel, also embracing getting that technology out to them. And so these people that you want to partner with, really making sure that they have everything to be successful as well.
Right. Ability to execute.
Yes.
Yeah. So using technology to execute on strategy. So from that point of view, Scott, how is that different, Scott, to RevOps or SalesOps?
Well, RevOps is what RevTech's delivering on top of, right? So there's been a lot of general commentary around what RevOps is, but I simply see a RevTech platform such as ours sort of wedging our way between ERP, CRM, ITSM, license management systems, and talking to all of, and this is the key part, right? The APIs are the critical component to this. This, you know, is the next year is going to be APIs that will be everything. So, you know, in order to get your organization running, even with a direct or with channels, you need to accumulate all that data, all of the telemetry coming out of ERP, all the telemetry coming out of CRMs, and talk to the post-sale support systems in order to provide I hate to use a single pane of glass or a single source of truth, but a mirrored source of truths from various systems.
Okay, so RevOps is a strategy, sales, RevTech is the execution.
Yeah.
And I would maybe add in the ops is it's putting the process, the policy, the intelligence, the enablement around it, right? So the technology makes it possible, but using it right, knowing how you want to use it and enabling people within your company and outside if necessary is important because in this world of acronyms that we live in and running fast, especially in the technology world, people can misconstrue data. It can be there, but if you don't understand it, that's wrong. So the operations, you know, puts the policy in place, puts the training and really adds the empowerment besides just, I've got a tool.
Right. And there also is an extension to that, right, Barry, where I mean, the flavor of the time at the moment, because every company wants to be a tech company. So automate as much as possible, you know, everything if possible. You know, Scott keeps telling me I want everything because I'm lazy. And then allow the people, the salespeople, to go out and like do innovative work based on the data that they're given from revenue technology executions if they're done right. And it seems automation seems to be the flavor of the time, and we're starting to see these principles, all right, around, you know, implementing RevTech. So I wanted to ask you both, because you were both early in this process, what are the key principles that you guys have seen for best practice so that my audience can say, no, I need to go off and do this? You know, what's the real stuff as opposed to what organizations want to convince other people are the real high impact variables? Barry, talk to me.
So automation is a great word. It's a key word as we look forward, but it's one we have to be careful of too. It can drive efficiency, which drives profitability or acceleration of what you're trying to do. One of the pitfalls that I find is sometimes we try to automate too fast or automate too many things before we're ready. And so ensuring that you apply these technologies at the right time in the right way is important, because if you are still dealing with garbage and you automate it, you're just getting garbage faster. So make sure you really understand what you're working with, what you're trying to get from point A to point B, if it's information, and that you do it in a very controlled manner. Otherwise, you can actually have the adverse effect.
Okay, that's really interesting, because Scott, you're always talking about a very similar thing, and also understanding that the data that you've collected probably wasn't necessarily collected for the purpose that you needed for going forward. All right. So your best practice principles, what are they?
Well, I think we've even moved a step further on that. So we've all agreed that there's silos of data sitting around in the organization, and those silos weren't collected for install base or product life cycles or expand or extend campaigns. So it's about joining all of those together in a cohesive way. And to Barry's point, garbage in is garbage out. But there's also a point where you have to get the garbage in to start cleaning it. Now, a lot of people do get focused on data cleansing before loading platforms such as ours. But I always advocate that if you actually sat there and tried to clean the data, by the time you've cleaned all that data, it's already starting to go off, because that's what data does. So clean, it's better to clean as you go. And then, you know, if your cycles are 12 months, then in 12 months and one day, you've got a solid base to work from now. And really, I think we've seen a lot of organizations starting to rush at this because they now understand that if they don't have this solid foundation of data, AI is going to tell them it's great rubbish, right? So you've got extending out, garbage in, garbage out, right? Yeah. Super garbage.
Yeah.
So I would advocate that you need basically two things. You need to get the data, access to the data, but you also need strong policies as to how the organization is going to run, so that you can tell the platforms what the policy looks like and how it's going to run. And that's where true automation comes from, which is taking the boredom and the minutiae out of the process so that your people can get on with the more creative relationship-based stuff.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense, because it also talks to, it's the data's not dirty, right? It just needs to be repurposed.
Yeah.
And the difference between, you know, the data you have and repurposing that data, revenue technology comes in and allows you to help not clean the data, but repurpose the data for something which usually is called asset lifetime value or customer lifetime value and execution on that. So I'm going to ask you both, because it's so obvious you should do, you know, everyone should be doing this, but what gets in the way of this best practice? And Scott and Barry, I'm asking you this because, you know, IT teams, which you both have managed, are starting to get a bad rap. Like yesterday, for example, I had a major vendor call, and it was about his IT team. I'm not going to tell you who, but he called his IT team the revenue prevention department. That's not good, right?
No, that's not good. But there's also, I mean, there's a fundamental concept people should always understand, is the difference between great organizations and okay organizations. A great organization's business runs IT. Okay organizations, IT run the business. And it's a completely different view on the way you go to market. And you can see the success out there in companies where the business is telling IT what you need to be provided versus the other way around. Now, in a RevTech space, the other challenge with any SaaS company, it doesn't even have to be RevTech, is we're always competitors to internal IT because internal IT want to build everything. You know, they want control of that process. But, you know, I've said this once before, and someone corrected me because someone has built their own ERP system, but normally people don't bother building accounting systems or ERP or CRM. I mean, all of those horses are bolted. Really, they have to relook at how they engage with it. They shouldn't lose control of everything. They should engage with these SaaS companies and then control the way all of the platforms talk together.
Okay, yeah. So, well, that's interesting. And Barry, you've been in the trenches here, you know, more often than not. And you must have an idea of what turns an IT department from the sales prevention department to the sales acceleration department.
Definitely. And you know, what Scott said really resonated, right? It's really making sure that your IT department understands the business need. And whether that's your internal department or if you're using a vendor externally, helping them understand that so they can help you solve the business problem. And it brings me back to my time at VMware when Scott and I first started working together. Mm-hmm. And we were working with the iAsset platform, and our IT team was obsessed with, we needed single sign-on technology. Right. We needed to have that security. And only until we sat down with them and helped them understand that 99% of the users were going to be outside of the company. So prioritizing that as a need was less critical. Not that you still didn't need to have a way to secure and control who was accessing your platform over the long term. That was important. To understand. The other thing that it brought in for us was as we started to bring this technology out, is people started to understand that along with automation, it was the real-time nature that we were recapturing in our business. So as we moved into the world of cloud-like models, monthly recurring revenue, monthly billing, those types of things, and what we found was by the time we would identify an issue, get to the right person inside our company that was our account manager that happened to deal with a customer that they could then have a question and set up and have a meeting and discuss the issue, that oftentimes they were working on bad data. Those things can take weeks to happen. And so that automation or creating the real-time visibility into what's going on in the business. Is this still an issue? When I sent that email 3 weeks ago saying we needed to talk about this and someone was out and someone was traveling and we could finally get together or not, but doing it in that secure way, right? So making sure that you give people the right access to the right data in real time was really critical. And that was one of those great things that we solved when we deployed the iAsset.
All right. Well, there's a whole bunch of real critical aspects there. So when there's no prevention, it's because all that was covered beforehand. And I think the important thing here is if you are using a RevTech platform or RevTech tool, make sure that those ticks are already covered as soon as you get to the table with IT. So that goes away. And then you can actually start talking about, you know, what positive outcomes we're going to achieve on that. So just very quickly on that to both of you, what are the immediate positive outcomes that you see when you deploy a bona fide RevTech platform?
I think I would say probably some of what we've talked about is the when I look at data and I tend to look at it from a inside and outside the company perspective, I have a lot of focus working with the channel. And that means you really need to do it well, you really need to keep everyone connected. If you do it right and you create this efficiency, you become more friendly to work with the channel, right? The if you build it, they will come mentality of the old Field of Dreams movie is great, but you know, we have to remember as technology vendors that our channel partners, they don't work for just us. They're not exclusive. They're not our sellers. And so you really have to help connect them. So you have to enable them and make sure that they're leveraging that. And the vendors that make it easier to work with mm-hmm. drive their costs down, right? And they're running businesses. And so that RevTech, if you not only use it in your own company, but use it to enable your extension of the company, you can have a huge impact.
Okay. Okay. Scott, what do you think?
Well, from my point of view, I think the most immediate effect is time to get quotes, or if it's in a cloud consumption, from a cloud consumption point of view, it's visibility of what's going on out there on the channel. But it's time. The first thing I see is a saver of time. We just deployed one instance just recently. And when I say recently, 2 weeks ago, it took their quote times down from 40 odd minutes to 5. And they haven't actually really cut the configurator up properly yet. There's still a lot of savings in that. Over the long term, I think, you know, what you see with RevTech or platforms such as ours is once you turn them on, it creates a huge amount of opportunities that customers may not have dealt with before. Like, we've had one customer turn it on, there was over $100 million worth of expand opportunities that they could now access that they'd never seen. Or another company that had 425 renewal reps trying to run the base, they got that down to 100 and tripled the revenue. So the long-term issues, I'm now grappling with a customer right now who asked us to turn off the renewals engine because it's generating too many opportunities and they're drowning. And I said, well, that's not the solution. The solution is to trust the automation and let the quotes go out automatically. But, you know, that's a different issue.
Okay, so that really touches something here, because we've been talking about how you get there, and you guys have been talking about this thing, and you both use this word "that," and that being the platform. So, Barry, I'm going to turn to you. We had a lengthy conversation a little while ago, and you said something to me that has really stuck with me. You said, get the tech that works rather than extending what you have. And that just has stayed with me. Can you unpack that for me?
Well, yeah, I think in a modern company, and the complex ones I deal with, right? There's desires to have these Uber platforms of the world that everyone in the company can lean into one thing. You know, it started off as CRM, or it started off as ERP, and you start to build pieces or buy things, but until it's really integrated and perfected, you struggle with it, right? So you have to understand what your goals are, right? If your goal is to create a collaborative space, to create efficiency, and I'll go again back to the channel side and call it outside the firewall, right? Finding something that's purpose built, that has the functionality where you really need it, is important, because the world of APIs and integrations that we live in have really created the ability to take these best of breed solutions and say, look, it doesn't all have to be in one. You can have the right thing. You got to be careful that you don't end up with 5,000 different platforms to do things. But if you find the right ones that help you create this extension and leverage, I think you get a lot better impact than trying to force fit the guy who's added a module on that checks the boxes, but perhaps needs a year of customization or millions of dollars of work to be done to really get it working.
Yeah, that, and this is a common theme, and we hear this all the time, Scott. And I guess this is where like the Channel Gateway APIs really become important, to be able to bring in systems that are different people consider best practice. Like, you're not going to change your ERP systems, you might not change your CPQ, you might not change your CRM, but you need to integrate into something that's going to give you true RevTech. And without the APIs, it doesn't work. What's your experience been in being able to put all this together? Because iAsset is a platform that everything can come into it, and it can become a single platform.
Absolutely. I think to the earlier point, most large organizations are running Salesforce, SAP, NetSuite, Oracle. And of course, there's a band of consultants that sit around those deployments that want to make sure you keep consuming customizations and software upgrades and all the rest of it. So I've seen plenty of failures in people trying to build RevTech out of ERP or out of Salesforce type implementations.
Right.
And fail dismally, because you can spend $50, $100 million and you've got to where the market was 14 years ago or 15 years ago. It's not really an outcome. With us, our ability to connect to anything is critical internally. And if you talk about the channel, which is where the channel gateway piece comes in, the objective of channel gateway is to connect to parties that may not be ISAT.com platform customers, but to pass their data down to the channel or vice versa, so that you're still getting some level of cohesity amongst all of the players, but they might not necessarily all be customers. So you know, to Barry's point about the channel, if you do something that puts more load on your channel, it's going to fail. And PRMs are particularly an issue because there's so many, not only so many PRMs, but so many vendors running them that resellers now have to deal with. And if you logged into every one of those PRMs every day, you'd never get any work done. So again, the API piece, which I think, you know, is going nuts next year, in particular, that's how I see it. That's going to change the way a lot of these organizations engage. It means the vendor's going to get the data they need sent uphill to so they can manage their business, but the channel doesn't have to sit there and rekey it into their system as well as the vendor system. That's where I see the efficiency anyway.
Yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense because, Barry, you and I spoke about this, and Scott, you and I talk about it all the time. It points to an issue at the moment, which I'm hearing several times a day, not even a daily basis, but several times a day, is that vendors are, and Barry, you know, you've worked in many of them, vendors, they roll out a channel program, but they don't give you the tools to implement the channel program or the ability to execute, apart from their closed, you know, PRM or partner portal. You know, a good example recently, Cisco went live a little while ago saying that the Cisco Lifecycle Advantage program, it's taken 10 years, it's still not complete, and it only cares about Cisco. But the channel knows all too well that there is no one technology that lives in isolation. So let's talk about that. It's a massive concern to distributors and MSPs and resellers and their customers. So how does good RevTech help the channel here when you've got so many vendor platforms saying you must work with this one?
Yeah, I think that's... It takes me back to just kind of maybe piling on what Scott was saying is, right, we as technology vendors, as someone who wants partners to sell our stuff, we tend to, and your own IT teams definitely tend to think about the what's inside the company and how does it work, right? And building something that almost stubs off that well, it's great that we've provided this data in an automated way to our partners, but they still have to download it and upload it and process it. That's where the bad implementations kind of stop.
Right.
But giving the ability for people to work in their space still. So if you're a distributor and you need to ingest this information into your system so you can be efficient and have it flow, if you will, then that's equally important to ensure that you have the APIs on the other side of it, right? If I think of this world, there's a vendor and there's RevTech, and then there's your channel. Making sure that you embrace that is equally important. Otherwise, you're really only one step better than, you know, the old school world of channel tech was Microsoft Outlook and Excel or Gmail and G Sheet.
It still is Excel, Barry.
it still very much is. But if you can provide it in a way and then spend the time, you know, this is where that RevOps side comes in as well. It's enabling the partners to understand, here's how it works. It's great. And, you know, I'll go back to, you know, the great experience that we had at VMware, where it got to the point where we could have 4,000 orders a month coming through our system, leveraging iAsset, and we were able to make them essentially touchless. The system had the controls built in that we needed into it. It let our partners choose, do they still want to suck this information into their systems and send it over their traditional EDI feed? Or do they want to press the button and send it straight into our system? Because we created the integration both ways. And so if you think about the downstream effect that you ultimately want coming back in, that's equally important. So making sure you have the tech that everyone can leverage. You know, again, if you want it to be outside the company, don't. It's great that you've created the information for someone, but if it just becomes a download, it's one step better than you having to send them an email with a file.
Just to extend on that, Barry, you know, my push in all of the companies I've ever built and my push ultimately with iAsset is you want to automate the boring stuff, the stuff that's within, you know, all of the requirements that a business is dealing with, and then deal with the exceptions. And what I loved about that particular engagement was the compliance module. So while everything was flying, we were monitoring for anyone that was, you know, consuming 10,000 a month and then suddenly only consumed 1,000 or vice versa, because then it would trigger someone to actually go and have a look at it. And it might be an expansion, big expansion opportunity, or someone's trying to get around the system. So that's where you use people to do the exceptions and let the system do the boring.
Okay, so what comes to mind now, and it would be remiss of me not to ask this. I probably shouldn't, but I'm going to ask it. And if you guys want to, please respond. And it's about Barry. I'm hanging off the everyone can benefit comment that you made. So Scott, you've got this revenue technology that you took to Barry once, and they would have in those discussions. There would have to have been a sweet spot where Barry said, yes, I have to do this, regardless of it not being something that the vendor has created or a augmented, extended, widgeted extension of what we already do. And Barry went, I've got to go do this. What was the magic moment?
I don't know. I mean, Barry's probably better to answer that question. But from my point of view, you know, all those years ago when we started that journey with VMware, there was nothing else around. I mean, some of the work we did for Barry built platforms that are now running other vendors around the planet. It was really nascent at that time for the cloud consumption and subscription side of the business.
Okay.
But Barry would have to give you feedback on the other side.
Yeah. I would say, you know, the way it all transpired was, you know, we had a challenge. We had identified a challenge in scaling our business, right? We had a business model that people were buying into, but a scale challenge for those that were administering the business inside and outside the company, because our set of tools, our ERP system and order management process wasn't built for that. We were a software company that sold ELAs, and every, you know, 2, 3, 4 years you came back, and we had built this new model at the time where we were taking this every 3-year transaction and it was turning into a bunch of micro 1-month transactions, because it helped support the business model that our service provider partners needed. So we identified this challenge. I saw some information as I was searching for how to solve it about the iAsset platform, and you know, Scott and his team, from a technical perspective, we had a literally a 1-hour video call, and a few weeks later came back with a, you know what, here's how I think we can solve it. And you know, they put a little bit of investment into the platform to make that happen. But it's that same thing: make sure your IT department understands your true challenge. And in this case, we were too overloaded on our own internal IT team, and there was a platform that was pretty good, just needed a little bit of adjustment as we were working into this new world, that we were able to go to, and the team delivered, and we continued to then, you know, evolve as over the course of time, as we came upon new challenges in the business, that we needed to apply common principles, but in that were unique to our situation. And so it was having a team that listened and could figure out either how to leverage the platform that was there, or, you know, every so often we did a little bit of customization.
Okay. So it's as simple as the business identified a problem that needed to be solved. And the answer was some form of RevTech, and the answer was, well, we're going to look everywhere, not just inside. We're going to look at what's going to solve this problem the best for us. Does it have to be inside?
Yeah.
Is it as simple as that?
Yeah. And this is where I think the Rev Tech and the Rev Ops start to come together, right? They're gonna Perfect. Overlap. You're gonna make these trade-offs, right? So we created a program model, a business model for our partners, and it, you know, laid out guidelines and rules and everything. And in a perfect world, Everything always happened. No one got sick. No one at the company left. No one forgot to do something. But in the real world, all those things happen. And so while the RevOps policy might have been enough, the real world took over and the RevTech came in and helped us bring those together. And so when you see those two things come together, that's where, that's where you can kind of create this perfect meld that says, how do we combine them and prevent not necessarily the malicious stuff, but the accidental things that happen in the real world. Someone that leaves a company doesn't maybe transition all their responsibilities to their replacement, and paying a bill for stuff that you already have that you're using, which was our model, sometimes fell off the radar screen. And, you know, we also found that there was that scale challenge, right? When some of our biggest channel partners that were helping us run this program, when they got, more than 50 or 60 accounts, you factored all those things in and you couldn't keep track of it on Excel, no matter how actively you color coded and filled out schedules, it was impossible for them to keep track of. And, you know, we were able to fix that problem and get some of these guys to, they didn't grow from 50 or get stuck at 50. They were up to hundreds of accounts that they were managing effectively, right? Effectively and efficiently. And that was the thing, was as a vendor, we were able to look globally and put tech out there with Scott's help that they could all leverage, that they couldn't necessarily justify themselves. And as a technology vendor, you know, we know margins peak at the vendor side and they squeeze down as you go through the channel, right? So you have to understand, do I need to throw more money and profit at my partners, or do I need to reduce their costs? And in this case, we were able to reduce costs so we could reinvest into the business. And, that was actually viewed well by them. It became easier. They didn't need to justify putting another body on it on their own side or understanding that cost. And for us, the actual end result was we were re-empowered because we weren't dealing with 30 partners and their spreadsheets if we wanted the information of what was really going on. Now that we took that data through the platform and the processes that we put in place, we were re-empowered to own our business. And I think vendors that do that, you meld those together, you recapture ownership, but you also empowered your partners in doing it.
Yeah, well, I love that, because Barry, you're talking to the real business problem, and that is empowering internally to be able to execute well. And at the end of the day, it's executing well that means not just cost reduction, but at the same time, revenue improvements. And that usually comes with deploying some form of technology. So, Scott, how hard is it to get a vendor to understand that the technology is already there? You don't need to invent it.
Well, I think it depends on the audience inside the organization. I've engaged years ago with SVPs that need to get a change done, but you're fighting Middle Earth to change the way that the process inside that business works. So you have different gatekeepers that occasionally can be blocks to getting that done. So it just depends on the organizational culture. If you've got people that are motivated, and right now, I mean, there's a lot of motivation at the moment because of the downturn in the economy. So people are letting people go. You know, there's more people leaving the organization. They've still got to service the same number of customers. How to become more efficient? So crisis is always an opportunity for looking for change.
It always is. And gents, listening to you both very attentively, because there's one question that my audience wants me to ask, and you've kind of touched on it just now, both of you, and it relates to this idea of customer churn and also net revenue retention. So I need to not only go out and look for new business, I need to keep the business I've got and need to expand it. And in particular, they're asking what kinds of RevTech is out there, revenue technology is out there to help them minimize their customer churn. Barry, what have you seen?
Well, I think the first thing is making sure you've got all your data consolidated. You have so many technology vendors these days which have been acquisitive, right? And if they haven't completed those integrations, if they, you know, pulled data in, you know, consolidated databases, consolidated CRM systems, right? You're working off a mix of data, and the harder you make it for your own internal teams to have to go to multiple platforms, it just becomes a struggle. And so you tend to have people that focus on the, well, this is what I know. We haven't really integrated this in, and you have multiple companies operating under one corporate umbrella.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Scott, you'd relate to that, mate, because, you know, you wanted to do this, what Barry's talking about, so badly that you invented a technology about best part of two decades ago at DC, now Arrow, and now you're commercializing it globally. Can you tell me why you innovated back then and why you're commercializing it now?
Well, again, a simple process, really, to, you know, if you go back an extra step, which is my Land Systems days before I sold that to Westcon, and you were there for that last part of it, I was trying to sell SmartNet contracts with every box that went out the door, because it's, you know, if the box is not a maintenance, it's not really being kept up to date. There's risk associated with that. And of course, as an organization, we wanted the upsell. So it was a manual process to start with in that business. And what I really did was move that into an automation cadence with the start of the, well, the nascent start of the platform, and building the configurator so that you could plug anything into it to sell the fries and the Coke and the apple pie with the burger. So that was the start of it. And of course, 12 months later, I had a problem because all these renewals started popping up, and we were growing, as you know, fantastically well. So compound interest is a simple concept that a lot of people understand, but they don't seem to understand it when it comes to renewals. If you keep adding those renewals into the bucket, it keeps expanding, you know, life is good. And as you also know, at the end of DC, 50% of my revenue for the new budget was always done and dusted because I knew renewal rates. So really, it was all about automating a distributor who, in essence, distribution doesn't have a lot of margin to play with. And the really big boys have a lot less margin to play with than I used to.
Right.
I could only make more money. I mean, obviously, I can organically grow, but really I can only make more money in a net profit context if I make myself as efficient as possible to keep driving cost out rather than trying to push, you know, margins up, which is never going to happen in IT.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting, because Barry, I want to ask you in response to that. I mean, you've worked in so many of the, you know, the great vendors. What Scott's talking about is we built our own technology because there was no technology. And once we, and what Scott is talking about, where we go right back, it was this company called Firewall Systems that we started that became Distribution Central. And the reason why it became Distribution Central, because what we were doing with security, all these other vendors that weren't security vendors would say, come and do it for me. You know, come and do this installed-based selling, this asset lifetime value stuff, come and do it. It was really easy for a vendor to come to us and say, represent me so that you can do this. Why is it the vendor actually doing this for and on behalf of their distributors and their resellers?
Well, I think you get a lot of vendors that can become territorial, and once they've landed the deal, they feel like they can own it, right? But they have to realize that the channel players out there, whether it be the distribution side or the reselling and solution providers out there, they're regularly out at these customers a lot more, probably on site every day, because they're not just selling one thing. They're really helping that customer understand the problem. And that renewal aspect, right? Whether, you know, it's a maintenance renewal or a new version of the platform, you want your channel enabled to actually go continue to fight that fight for you. It might be a little easier for them to get a renewal than land something new. The last thing you want, and quite frankly, the last thing I think most customers want is the partner that says, well, gosh, this vendor cut me out from the renewal side, but have you seen this shiny new object over here? Because ultimately they could just be in this cycle of continually changing out tech
because
of bad business practices, right? Bad business model. But if you really, you know, you find the right model where it says, look, you know, maybe I can incent you more heavily when you bring us that win than I can when it comes time for the renewal. But if you just completely cut them out, or only at the last minute you say, hey, I need you to process this order, that's very disingenuous, right? So the vendors who truly embrace the channel in maintain, not just winning those relationships, but maintaining that relationship and hopefully creating a model where you can do those extensions, where you can do those cross sells and upsells. If you build a program, if you put the tools in place, you put the automation and the information in place, then they have it. They know that this renewal is coming up in 6 months, 9 months, 12 months. Put it out there in advance and build the right, not just rev ops, but kind of business strategy and business model that says, okay, here's when and how you do want to leverage this. Because renewals, as an example, they're an inflection point for someone to have a discussion with the customer, whether it's your seller, whether it's your support team, whether it's your partners. Something's got to happen. The hopefully the customer is actually using it and it's not just sitting there unused. As long as they're using it, there's a discussion that needs to be had that says, hey, this is timing out, it's expiring, it's end of life, you know, whatever it is. And if you enable that, then the guys that are out there can weave that into the conversation, because every seller, whether they be yours or at a partner, wants a reason to have to talk to their customer and not, and not have it be a cold call.
Well, yeah, it's important, right? It's really important. And, you know, we could talk about this to the cows come. And you guys have been very generous in the information that you've given me for my viewers, and I thank you. But I do really have one last question, and we kind of have covered it, but I just want to ground into it. Just get a bit of a grind happening here, because vendors seem to forget, and Barry, tell me if there's a reason for this or not. The vendors seem to forget that no technology lives in isolation. So the word ecosystem has come about. It used to be, we used to call these things, you know, all kinds of stuff, like reference architectures, for example. But then suddenly the reference architecture is not the only thing. So, okay, you need some kind of ecosystem-based CPQ to put all that together. And Scott, I know you created a FlexPod configurator because it didn't exist. And Barry, I mean, you've got the VMware experience, and we've got the Cisco experience and the NetApp experience. With that technology that all parties agreed was necessary from putting the technology together, but nobody was going to put the transaction together. So that meant like months sometimes of time to put the transaction side of it together. So Scott invented this thing called a FlexPod configurator, and the rest is history. It was like Australia was selling more than anyone ever at one stage, you know, little old Australia, but it happened. How open are vendors to working with other vendors on a democratized platform like something like iAsset to be able to, you know, accelerate their extension strategies and get more of these reference architectures sold?
Yeah, I would say there's, my experience is there's a mixed bag, right? It depends on the culture, the experience. If you've had a bad experience in trying to make partners work with you in the past, you probably don't really understand it. But you know, even at the best companies, right? And I've worked at some companies that have really, really great channel models, history of respect and collaboration with the channel, and I've been elsewhere as well. And if you can really do that, maybe you're lucky if you get to the point where 10% of the company truly understands the value of working with those partners. Mm-hmm. And that part of the company, they need to fight for their partners and justify the how. Just having I found a new tool doesn't make sense, but really building these business cases. And so having a strategic sense and plan around your operational evolution. You know, strategic operations is a unique niche to be in, to be able to say, not only can we do this, but here's why, here's what it's going to return, and then here's how we change and recapture it. Because there's probably a lot of CFOs out there that have invested in platforms, but the company didn't follow through with, well, here's how it gets us more efficient, right? Maybe we need less people over here, or we can slow down our hiring because we'll make our sellers, our success teams, capable of covering more by creating this leverage. And if you don't follow through, then it's not. And so I think if you find the vendors who really want to embrace that and really see that through, you can create success. But if you don't fully deliver, and this is, you know, again, taking it end to end, like making sure you don't just do things like, you know, make it available to your partners, you get them to use it and adopt it, and then you follow through with those changes, they take time. And I think a lot of technology companies these days, the tenure tends to be so short that by the time it's time to come back and say, here's how we make these changes, you know, you could have half the people either gone from the company or certainly moved on to new roles. And that's, I think that creates some of the challenges out there. But, you know, the industry's come a long way, right? When I first started doing channel tech, you know, in my Cisco days, there weren't available platforms yet. We were running, you know, a huge amount of business through the channel and investing a huge amount of money. And so we had to build our own tech. There were nation state platforms, but we were so big, you know, when you have, you know, multi-billions of dollars of business and, you know, hundreds of millions of incentives. Yeah, you can justify making some of these investments, but now you have, I mean, it's pretty amazing to see some of the categorization of channel tech. It's, you know, purpose built and understanding and finding the right platform is important, you know, because, you know, you can have a category that can be pretty broad. You know, it might be about really creating these collaboration and selling and getting partners to work together and recognizing the fact that the world's changed and you don't just have one partner that does everything for a customer. And there's others that really enable the execution of the business.
Right. That bit there, I want every one of my audience to listen to that 10 times over and over, what Barry just said, because it's kind of like the roadmap to success for what's happening now in an ecosystem world where no vendor lives in isolation. Scott, I'll close with you by asking, based on what Barry just said, and again, thank you to both of you. You've just been very generous with your information. This is a masterclass. But Scott, is the appetite for vendors to integrate with each other there yet, based on what you're seeing, or is this still a distributor and reseller problem to solve?
Look, let's go back to the FlexPod as an example, because people might be able to solidify it in minds without being on a whiteboard. But think about the challenge at the time was Distribution Central had an agency for NetApp and did not have an agency for Cisco or VMware. So Cisco was maybe Westcon, VMware, I think it was Avnet in those days from memory. So you had three different distributors, potentially a whole bunch of different partners, all that NetApp, Cisco, and VMware wanted them to sell FlexPods. So someone had to step up and consolidate the informational part of the configuration, right? If you've got a FlexPod that's 2,500, 3,000 line items, again, the challenge is you've got to go to one distributor for a whole bunch, you know, and the two others. So we consolidated that into, it was actually what we used to call a sizeinator instead of a configurator. You just punch in how many VMs you need to deliver on that FlexPod, and it worked out everything. Mm-hmm. I think the complexity for vendor-to-vendor partnerships is it's got nothing to do with drive. It's all to do with who's going to get paid at the end of the day. And if the sales rep, you know, to your point about information, if the sales rep doesn't get paid within 30 days or whatever it is for the sale, they're going to lose interest in selling that thing, because they can sell just a Cisco component, just a NetApp component, or just a VMware component and get paid quickly. So you have to connect the dots as related to all of the channel part of it and the vendors, so that everyone gets a single view. And I fundamentally believe, from an ecosystem point of view, and that was our go-to-market when we first launched this, we're the only one that can glue the dots together, whether they're customers of ours or not. And that's the critical part of this, is connecting all the dots so that someone sitting inside Cisco, someone sitting inside VMware, and someone sitting inside NetApp can see what they sold of that FlexPod through who as a distributor and reseller and where it is as an end customer.
Yeah, and the whole lifetime value of those assets someone's got to continue on with that in an automation point of view, which is a really good example. And I thank you for going into detail in that. Gents, we've hit the hour. So much gratitude to you both for giving this. I think we need to have part twos and part threes of this kind of conversation as we go forward, because there's so much there in terms of anyone in the channel, in the technology channel, needing to start getting their heads around the kind of RevTech that's out there for them to be able to be successful in partnership with everyone in that ecosystem. No point talking about it. You've actually got to do it. The technology's there. You've really given a lot of information about the proposition and the proposal that you would put on a table. What I'd love to do next time, if you guys are both up for it, is once that proposal has been accepted, what happens then? All right, because I think my audience will really get a lot out of that, because the nuts and bolts are really important now. So I thank you both, and I will see you in the next version of this. Barry, you're a champion, mate. You're perfect. Thank you so much. And Scott, thank you so much for that practical advice. I really appreciate it. We will see you guys soon. Everybody have a wonderful day, and we'll see you on the next one.